So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 15, text number 11.
Yeah.
Yep. Just checking. Tasya Abhishekya Arabdo. Brahmana Brahma Bhadibi. Abhishekya. Abhishechanikan yashmai Ajaru sabatojana Tashyabhishekya arabdho Brahmana brahma bhadivi Abhishechanikan yashmai Ajaru Sarvatojana. The learned Brahmanas who were very attached to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies then arranged for the king's coronation. People from all directions collected all the different paraphernalia for the ceremony. Thus everything was complete. So text number 12. Sarit Samudra Girayo Nagavaya Kagamriga Jok Chiti Sarva Bhutani Samajaru Upayanam. All the rivers, seas, hills, mountains, serpents, cows, birds, animals, heavenly planets, the earthly planet, and all other living entities collected various presentations according to their ability to offer the king. Shri Bhishiko Maharaja Subhasa Sar Alankrita Pachnya Chir Shalankritaya Reje Me Ivapara. Thus the great King Prithu, exquisitely dressed with garments and ornaments, was coronated and placed on the throne. The king and his wife Archie, who was also exquisitely ornamented, appeared exactly like fire. Hasma Jahara Dhanadho Haimam Vira Vashanam Vurunna Salila Sravam Atapacham Sashi Prabham. The great sage continued, Madhya Vidura Kuvera presented the great King Prithu with a golden throne. The demigod Varuna presented him with an umbrella that constantly sprayed fine particles of water and was as brilliant as the moon. Vayuscha Vila Vyajani Dharma Kiritimayam Sajam Indra Kiritam Utkritstam Adandham Sam Yamananam Yamaha. The demigod of Vayu presented King Prithu with two whisks, chamaras of hair. The king of religion Dharma presented him with a flower garland which would expand his fame. The king of heaven Indra presented him with a valuable helmet. And the superintendent of death, Yamaraj, presented him with a scepter with which to rule the world. Brahma, Brahma, Vayamba, Vama, Bharati Haram Uttamam, Hari Siddhashanam Chakram, Tat Patnya Yahatam Shriyam. Lord Brahma presented King Prithu with a protective garment made of spiritual knowledge. Bharati, Saraswati, the wife of Brahma, gave him a transcendental necklace Lord Vishnu presented him with a Sudarshan disc, and Lord Vishnu's wife, the goddess of fortune, gave him imperishable opulences. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. All the demigods presented various gifts to King Prithu. Hari, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Upendra in the heavenly planet, presented the king with a Sudarshan disc. It should be understood that this Sudarshan disc is not exactly the same type of Sudarshan disc used by the Personality of Godhead Krishna or Vishnu. Since Maharaj Prithu was a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's power, the Sudarshan disc given to him represented the partial power of the original Sudarshan disc. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So here we see that these personalities, the greatest personalities from all over the universe, are presenting Prithu Maharaj and his wife with these various valuable gifts. So just a little perspective of the context of Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj, the previous king, King Vena, was dethroned. In fact, he was put to death for his being a very, you know, evil person. And then, by the arrangement of the Brahmanas, then Prithu Maharaj appeared, along with his wife, Archie, and they were understood by the knowers of the Vedas, the Brahmanas, to be the personality of Godhead, or, in fact, a Saktavesh avatar, actually an empowered living entity who's empowered with the to act powerfully like the personality of Godhead, Saktavesh avatar. So that has been discussed a little. So therefore, you know, they're offering gifts appropriately, and of course here we see that he is being given Sudarshan Chakra, and that Sudarshan Chakra, we know that the personality of Godhead carries the disc, but he is being given a disc appropriate to being a Saktavesh avatar, where that Sudarshan disc is also a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's power within the Sudarshan Chakra. So, you know, they're doing everything very, very appropriately. Now, it's described in verse 10 that how do they know these things? Because Prithu Maharaj and his wife Archie have just appeared. They haven't done anything yet. They haven't done anything to show any, you know, prowess of being anyone in particular. Of course, their, you know, their bodily features are quite astounding. But we see here that, you know, among the, you know, we get a glimpse of that the Lord Brahma. Here, Lord Brahma arrived, accompanied by all the demigods and their chiefs, and he, seeing the lines on Lord Vishnu's palm, or King Prithu's right hand, and impressions of lotus flowers on the soles of his feet, Lord Brahma could understand that King Prithu was a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So actually, from Lord Brahma, from his mouth, emanated the, the Vedic literatures. And within the Vedic literatures, all this knowledge that Lord Brahma has, which he has received from Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, that knowledge is presented within the Vedic literatures. And Brahmanas study that knowledge. Can I get a Bhagavad Gita as well, please? Brahmanas study that knowledge and they can ascertain from the Vedic literatures the exact position of a person. So, within the within the Vedic text, there are such, study of the science of astrology. So, or we can see certain omens or indications. What's that?
It's not English.
Yeah. And these omens or indications. Thank you. Someone's awake. There are, one aspect of being Krishna conscious. First, we have to be conscious. Then Krishna conscious comes after that. These omens are present within the cosmos, and they're present within nature, and they're present within our bodies. They're everywhere. And you can actually see exactly what is happening by these certain indications that are presented by the Supreme Lord. There are just generally when an astrologer, these same omens which are presented here as the bodily features of a person are presented in the astrological texts. Because when an astrologer does an astrological reading, these days what they do is they go on intuition, which means mental speculation, or they'll say anything they want to get your money. Basically what they do is they say all these things you like to hear, and if you keep nodding and smiling, they're thinking, okay, I'm going to get paid well. And they'll tell you, in your past life, you're a great king or a great queen, and you're the hero, and you did so many things, and of course, none of this you can prove. But people love it, and they'll just lap it up like that. See? But the all sciences in the Vedas, everything must be supported by so many evidences. Anything that's, given, it is so many evidences. Not just you can take one statement out of context and there's nothing to support it. So, within the astrological sciences, actually, when a person even approaches an astrologer, the first thing the astrologer will notice is what is happening at that moment this person is coming to see me. Is there something inauspicious? Are the crows flying from the right to the left? Are they flying from the left to the right? Are there so many different things. Am I breathing from the left nostril, the right nostril? So many different things. And they can understand, even before they look at the chart, that the answer to this question is that what they want will fail or what they want will succeed, or this person has come here to with some devious intention, and I do not want to help them. The astrologer won't help them at all. So many things are known. So here now the interesting thing is that G generally, you know, because I came to the movement as an astrologer, probably for 30 odd years, maybe even 35, I've been around for 40 now, so I, you know, anything to do with astrology, I did not speak in class or even mention to devotees. It was like a bit of an underground movement because people generally in ISKCON felt that if you believed in astrology because of some things Prabhupada has said, then you know, you weren't surrendered to Krishna. You were depending on something else like that. So Srila Prabhupada said some very scathing things of astrology because he didn't want devotees, naturally, because they're going to be attached to the Vedas and, you know, that Vedic culture, and naturally, you know, he can understand that they will come across the astrological science and that could become a big thing in ISKCON. And he didn't want that they depend on astrologically in a very foolish way, as is done in the world. So, you know, similarly, with Ayurvedic medicine, you know, he didn't want that the devotees are running back to any doctor constantly, unnecessarily. If they're ill, yes. But what he didn't want is that, you know, you live your life foolishly, unregulated, you know, illicit sex, intoxication, not sleeping properly, not eating properly, and then you go to the doctor and, you know, oh, fix me, I'm always sick, you know, there's something wrong with me, give me some pill. You know, Prabhupada understood, if you actually live a good life, you won't get sick very much, generally. If there's something urgent, yes, go to a doctor, and whatever fixes it, because Prabhupada, you know, he in one letter, he said that, you know, in Kali Yuga, the diseases are very powerful, and sometimes you require Western medicine to, you know, very powerfully, very quickly fix that problem. Otherwise, you'll die. You know. For some of the, other medicinal treatments, because it can take a little while to, you know, get your immune system up and running and think, you'd be dead by then. So, but similarly with astrology, and Prabhupada gave this story that, you know, this is a similar thing that Prabhupada would present. That, you know, there was a man sitting in a tree, cutting a branch, and he was sitting on the side of the branch that would fall. See? And a person walked past, and that person said, if you keep cutting that branch, you will fall. So, you know, the person took note, oh, yes, yeah, you know everything, you know, you can see the future, you know, like this, you know, who do you think you are?
And Kalidas.
What's that?
Kalidas.
Yes. The one on the branch?
Yes.
There you go. I didn't want to bring up his name. But... anyway, so, anyway, he kept cutting at the branch. What do you think happened? He fell off, hurt himself. So then he goes chasing after the, you know, the person. He says, oh, you're a great yogi. He said, why is that? Oh, you can see the future. You see? So Prabhupada didn't want us chasing after astrologers like fools. And he didn't want ISKCON to be full of such, astrologers who are catering to such fools. But many times in the Bhagavatam, he mentions that these astrological texts are, you know, astrology is a great science and its misuse does not make it useless. And he gives his own life as an example how astrologers predicted certain things which he said came true. And he gives many different examples of how, you know, even, you know, he tells examples of how his family doctor was treating someone for some problem in the throat, very serious, and the person was getting sick. In fact, he was almost dying. And this doctor, who was a very, very, you know, reputable doctor, you know, for dealing with Prabhupada's family, he said, you go to this astrologer, you ask him, you know, what is wrong, because somehow, you know. And the astrologer said, you're being treated for this, but actually this is your disease. And so he went back to the doctor, and the doctor treated him for that, and he you know, was cured. So Prabhupada tells that story. There's something, you know, that astrology, when used properly, is valuable. It has its uses. Here, now, an interesting thing, you know, is that generally the impression is that these things, that, you know, there's a misunderstanding that these things are not for devotees. You know, astrology, Ayurveda, this, that, they're not for devotees. You know, these are for the, you know, non-devotees. We just have Krishna. You know. We don't need doctors. You excuse Mahatma. We don't need mechanics. We don't need a weather report. You know, these are for the non-devotees. We just depend on Krishna. You know, we don't check our brakes. We just drive our car. Krishna will save us. So anyway, you know, there's that notion. But actually, if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, you see a different story. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, actually, the actual truth is, and as Prabhupada said, all our acharyas, most of our acharyas were great astrologers. And, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, we see in 18... 42. Now, 41. The qualities of a Brahman. Brahmana chakriya visham sujanam cha param tapa kamani pravi bhaktani subhava pavadeya gunai. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras are distinguished by the qualities born of their own natures in accordance with the material modes of chastise of the enemy. And of course, Brahmanas, when they become transcendental, they're still Brahmanas, but they're Vaishnavas, but they're on a transcendental platform, but they still have these qualities. And Krishna explains, and Prabhupada, you know, paraphrases, that this section of the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us that whether you're a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, man, woman, it does not matter. If everything you do is attached to Krishna, you're attached to Krishna, is dedicated, surrendered to Krishna, then they all have the qualities of the Brahmanas. So Prabhupada said, the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Sudras, they all have the qualities of the Brahmanas if they dedicate everything to Krishna. And yet they're still acting according to their natural occupation and duty. So, and they become transcendental if they're attached to Krishna. So then these, the Samodha Master Pasuk Cham Cham Chirajavami Vacha Vyana Vigyana Mastikyam Brahma Kama Subhava Jam. These are the qualities of the Brahmana. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmanas were. Now, this ashtikam. See, some there are some Brahmanas who are actually not properly qualified as Brahmanas because in nashtika they don't, you know, properly follow the Brahmanas. Ashtikam means that, you know, they have faith in the Vedic scriptures. Having faith in the Vedic scriptures, that means that the Brahmanas are theistic. And one who is theistic has faith in the personality of Godhead. See? Now, actually, these astrological texts, Srila Prabhupada explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam that generally Brahmanas have two principal occupations. And that is helping people medically and astrologically. And the Brahmanas, with these two abilities, would then circulate amongst the community, helping people and spreading Vedic knowledge as they go. So very, this is the practical help. So these are the two. And so Brahmana, a true Brahmana, is theistic, or one who has faith in the personality of Godhead, which is one who has faith in scriptures means that they accept the scriptural conclusion that God, the absolute truth, that from which everything emanates, is the Supreme Father, the personality of Godhead. That is Brahma. Therefore, actually, the quality of a Brahmana being theistic, and Parasara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, says that you cannot be an astrologer unless you have faith in the personality of Godhead. See? Actually, you know, to study the astrological science properly, one should be a Brahmana. And to be a Brahmana means one has to have faith in the personality of Godhead. And Parasara Muni, the author of the Horasastra, which is the main scripture of the astrological thesis and all the various omens in that, says you cannot be an astrologer unless you have faith in the personality of Godhead, in which astrology is particularly meant for the devotees. So instead of saying, you know, astrology is not for the devotees, actually astrology can only be done by a devotee. Right? Because what is astrology? Astrology is the science of karma. And what is this science of karma without knowledge of God? How does that even work? There's no witness. There's no controller. Then how does that work? There's no working mechanism. You know, unless there's a personality of Godhead, an all-knowing person, there's no possibility of karma. How does my karma, my destiny, fit in with someone else's? So many living entities, an all-knowing person, for karma to work, an all-knowing person means that that person has to take birth at a particular time and circumstance where their karma matches up with every other living entity in the universe. It's like the traffic lights. We know there's a government. We know there's a government because the traffic lights are all coordinated. Certain people stop, certain people go. Certain people walk. You know, you ride your bike. So we know there's a government because we see that, you know, certain, you know, when living entities, by their karma, are forced to stop, they become trees. Now you stand there for 1,000 years. You know. When they're allowed to go forward, you know, you become a human, a demigod. So, you know, so therefore, actually, to the astrological science properly cannot be properly done unless one actually has faith in the personality of Godhead. And you know what that here is describing how different omens, but you know, what's not mentioned is that other things that are. That are known is that when a person appears, of course, you can draw up an astrological chart for the time that a person appears, and you see that, you know, the acharyas have drawn up a chart for Krishna, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti the Koi, he's drawn up a chart. He doesn't think he's wasting his time. He's not saying that this, oh, you know, I'm applying a material science to, you know, no. Actually, the science can be applied spiritually. The science of omens is generally taken as superstition, something materialistic, but it actually can be applied on a spiritual platform if one knows how to do that. Astrologically, one astrologer in the Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he, as a Brahmana, he wanted to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So by his profession, you know, he wanted to serve him as an astrologer. That's, so, you know, just like, you know, people who make cloth, if they wanted to approach, can I give you some cloth? So the Lord always accepted that, as he says in the Gita, whatever your occupation is, I will accept that. And if you utilize your occupation with your mind attached to me, you will know me in full. I will let you know me in full. And it's very, you know, peculiar that you know, we may think that, you know, a sudra can come and you know, dig on the farm, and Krishna will reveal himself to that person. Someone will do some business for Krishna in our movement, Krishna will reveal himself to that person. But if someone does astrology for Krishna, he will never know Krishna. Which, I'm not sure which part of the Gita that was in. But so the Brahmana, you know, he's looking astrologically, he's thinking, you know, I don't understand. I see that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I'll tell you how that's done in a minute. And so, you know, he was very confused. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya was very merciful to him. I won't go into the whole pastime. But he blessed him with love of Godhead for offering his service to the Lord so nicely and properly, and blessed him with love of Godhead, and blessed him to go back to the spiritual world. Okay. So, so what the astrologers do is, for instance, you know, certain planets can be in certain signs, and sometimes those planets, when you get planets that rule houses that represent Lord Narayan, houses 1, 4, 7 and 10, they're like the angles, the four corners. And when they come into contact with houses which represent Lakshmi, which is 1, 5 and 9, so 1 represents both, it's called a yoga. So when you have those planets which form those yoga-forming combinations, and they're exalted, or in their own, you know, especially if they're exalted, that means they're in a the sign where they function the greatest. That is very, very rare. But you can actually divide a sign. So that birth chart is one chart, but there are 16 divisional charts that you can draw up as well. So in other words, if you take the one of the signs and divide it into 9 divisions, each of the 9 planets and the nodes rule one of those 9 divisions. That's called the marriage chart. If that same planet is exalted there, oh, that's special. So 9 divisions means that, you know, each division has 3 degrees in 20 minutes. Because there's 30 degrees in a sign, the 9. Now, you can divide up to 60, you know, that means each one would have half a degree. So we're getting... Now, if that exalted planet, which is forming these yogas, is exalted in every one of those divisions, you've got God. Because it just doesn't happen. It's so rare. And then you get a combination of various planets. You've got something that just so rarely happens. You know, you just don't see it. I've done a lot of charts. I haven't found God yet. Not except in Krishna's chart. But, so, you know, you know, they. So it actually says in the astrological, you know, then this is Vishnu. You know, this is an incarnation. And of course, the scriptures also predict when those, because of the timing, because those astrological, you know, combinations, they only occur at an exact time, and astrologers can see. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya's grandfather predicted when the Lord will appear before he appeared, because then you can see when that the timing comes. So, but the point being that, you know, actually, properly speaking, therefore, all the sciences, you know, within the Vedas are most properly done by devotees. Others can do them imperfectly or in a motivated way for a business or so many things, but properly speaking, you know, these sciences, when properly done, are done by the devotees. And of course, you know, if one does not have faith that there is a personality of Godhead, that becomes a problem. So now here, Srila Prabhupada, in 1976, Prabhupada was in Washington and he gave a lecture on the day of the 10th anniversary of the incorporation of ISKCON. So he is in Washington, a very important place and very important day. And Prabhupada declared, what is the purpose of this movement? He said, the purpose of this movement is to present to the world who is the Supreme Father and that that person is Krishna. That is, you know, you just summed up the whole thing just in that statement there. The whole purpose of our movement is to present to people that there is a Supreme Father, first of all. Then, who is that person? That person is Krishna. In the scriptures, Srila Prabhupada explains that, Prithi Maharaj, his Shaktivesh avatar, the empowered incarnation of the personality of Godhead, the personality of Godhead manifests in his empowered representative, like that. And he is considered to be the first king, and he sets all the rules, what is religion, and what are the laws, and how people should live in this world, and how the world should be organized. If Srila Prabhupada says that, for example, if one doesn't know the laws of the government, what is their position? Because he's trying to explain, if we live in this world and we don't know the personality of Godhead, and religion means the laws of God, what sort of a mess will we have? Right? So, I mean, this world is full of religion everywhere you go. But what is vacant is that no one even believes that there is a personality of Godhead, even within religious movements. And those who do have no knowledge who he is and an imperfect understanding of religion. So you imagine, a person, if a human being wanders around the state of Victoria with no knowledge properly, a complete misunderstanding of what the laws of the government are, or, they'll make so many mistakes. Their life will become very hellish very quickly. And basically, their level of existence is like the cats and the dogs, who also, they don't really understand. They just wander around and, do as they please. Difference is, if a donkey walks past an apple store and takes one of the apples, he's not going to get thrown in jail. Although there was a case, it was a couple of years ago, it was one of the countries overseas, they were trying to work out, should we charge this animal that did steal some fruit or something. But of course, they're not responsible. But humans are. If a human takes an apple, then they'll be charged. So Krishna, Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna, it is mentioned here in Bhagavad Gita, why did he appear? It says in text number 7, Yada yada hidamasya glaniya bhavati bharata abhyutanam adamasya tadatmanam sujamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Now this word, glaniya, you have this discrepancies. When there are discrepancies, significant discrepancies and that becomes predominant, then Krishna appears to rectify religious principles. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gave one principle of what is religion, and that is to obey God. To surrender to God, to surrender to the laws of God, that is religious principles. Religion can be summed up, Srila Prabhupada says, in three words. Laws of God. Sometimes Prabhupada says three words and he says four or five. It's a bit tricky. But laws of God. So so the Bhagavad Gita in 1866, Krishna says, give up all your other forms of religion and just surrender unto me. Because that is proper religion. So the personality of Godhead, Krishna, is saying that is actually religion, is to obey the laws of God. If you have some other form of religion where you're not surrendered to the Supreme Lord, it's a discrepancy. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said in this lecture, as he said many times, that Krishna, he said it many times, especially in India, Krishna did not descend here to establish Hindu Dharma. And Prabhupada, many times he said, he did not descend to establish some sectarian religion. You know, that God is for the Christians. Or God is just for the Hindus. God is just for the Muslims. God is just for, you know, the Jews. If they're not following that, then there is no God for you. If you're not following Christianity, there's no God for you. There's sectarianism. Now, Prabhupada quotes this verse from Bhagavad Gita that Krishna states that he is the father of all living entities and the maintainer of all living entities. Not just all human beings, but God is the maintainer of all living entities. So there's, you know, there's no sectarian, even amongst humans, he's including all the living entities. Therefore, he's saying, you know, the ants, I'm maintaining them. For thousands of ants, you know, I have made arrangements for them. You can look at any species of life, Krishna has made arrangements for them. when Krishna appeared, you know, you can see that for Krishna, maintaining others is a very joyful affair, not difficult. We don't see anyone that can maintain others like Krishna. Krishna, you know, he had 16,108 wives. It's a lot. Each of them had 10 children, or 10 sons and some girls. Each of them had their children, 10 sons, some girls. It goes into the millions. The teachers, just to teach them, goes into the millions. The, you know, protective army, it goes into the billions. The cows goes into the billions. You know, Krishna, but it was just a joyful event for him, maintaining, that's just his personal place. You know, just that's his home. Just in his home, you just, oh yeah, maintain billions and billions of, you know, persons perfectly. See? So maintain, Krishna showed, you know, maintaining living entities, that's not a difficulty for me. No one has ever done anything even remotely like that. So, but Prabhupada said, if you just study that one verse, you'll understand the Gita and you'll understand religion. He said, if you can just understand, take that one verse, then you'll understand religion. God is not just for some sectarian, you know, group. God is for all living entities. That is the Supreme Father. So, then who is that personality? So, of course, that statement by Krishna that I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds, Arjuna, he fully accepted that. Of course, Krishna showed Arjuna the universal form. The entire universal form, past, present and future, was shown to Arjuna. Arjuna said, I totally accept what you have said. But people may say, oh, because I'm your friend, perhaps I have some bias. No. Vyasadeva, the compiler of all Vedic knowledge, he says the same. And of course, and Narada Muni, and all the great sages, they're saying exactly the same. And in current history, if you come down, all the great sages of India, the great acharyas, the greatest acharyas, they accept exactly what Krishna is. None of them have refuted Bhagavad Gita. They all accept, fully, 100%. What Krishna said, we accept. It has always been accepted, and we still accept. Śrīla Vyāsadeva, he compiled the Vedanta Sutra because Śrīla Prabhupāda, there are many people who study the Vedas and then you have the Vedanta, which is the conclusion of the Vedas, and they like to study philosophy this way and that way. And Śrīla Prabhupāda says, if you study philosophy and you never understand who is the Supreme Father, it's just nonsense. So Śrīla Vyāsadeva said, if you study Vedanta, then know who is the Supreme Father. Know that the cause of all causes, of everything you see, the cause of all causes, or the absolute truth, the Vedanta Sutra presents, the conclusion of the Vedas, that the absolute truth is the source of all direct and indirect manifestations. Direct means this spiritual world, and indirect means this material manifestation, which is a shadowy reflection of spiritual reality. And within this material world, that creation includes all the animate and inanimate objects. So the absolute truth is the source of everything. And the absolute truth, as stated, where the Bhagavad Gita is based upon the Vedanta Sutra. It is saying the same thing. It is discussing the absolute truth, and it presents that the absolute truth is the source of all material and spiritual manifestation is Krishna. And then Krishna says, therefore, surrender unto me, the personality of Godhead, and that is real religion. Otherwise, there's just discrepancies. Where that finishes, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam takes off to describe the absolute truth. Yes, the absolute truth is conscious. And the consciousness of the absolute truth, he is fully conscious, both directly and indirectly, of all manifestations that have emanated from him. Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita, says, I know everything, past, present and future. I know all living entities, but me no one knows. So, this understanding of Krishna, the Supreme Father, is presented very nicely in Srimad Bhagavatam to describe how Krishna is not an ordinary person. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam. Srila Vyasadeva presents that he is the original and full manifestation of the personality of Godhead, from whom all other expansions of God or Saktivesh avatars manifest. There are many, many manifestations of the eternal manifestations of the personality of Godhead, but Krishna is the origin of all of them. He is the supreme. And Krishna says the same in the Bhagavad Gita. There is no truth superior to me. Whatever Krishna stated in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever is stated in the Vedanta Sutra, is explained fully, expanded in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, Srila Prabhupada says, the Srimad Bhagavatam is presented by Vyasadeva to protect the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta. So just to make sure, that philosophers, they like to speculate this way and that. He made sure, if you want to study Vedanta, you understand that the absolute truth means the Supreme Father, Krishna, the personality of Godhead, from him everything is emanating. And that personality of Godhead, the controller of all living entities and all things, his law, his word, is his word, his laws constitutes religion. So here in this Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, we're hearing, and so, you know, these sages in this section will see very carefully how they examine who is God from the very beginning, and their ability to do that. But then we'll see as the chapter unfolds that Prithvi Maharaj is testing them. Well, I haven't done anything, so have you got it right? you're offering me prayers and glories. You sure I'm God? You know, because he's making the point that because Prabhupada says in one of the previous purports that if someone presents himself as a personality of Godhead, actually, according to Krishna's opinion, those persons are fit to be killed. Of course, you know, you can't kill everyone. You know, in Kali Yuga, Srila Prabhupada says, in India, every day they're producing another god. In the mystic factories. They have these mystic factories. It's like we had, you know, we pump our candy bars and things. They pump our god. Every day, he says. Every day, another god, another god, another god like that. In the mystic factories, in their brain. So, you know, you'd have to kill a lot of people. And actually, you see so many lectures Srila Prabhupada used to give. And people would stand up, you know, why are you saying worship Krishna? I am God. And Srila Prabhupada would sort of, toy with them a little bit until, you know, the person basically made a complete fool of themselves. But, actually, one time, you know, I was on my way to go Crossways, I think it was. I was with two of my daughters who were, you know, probably about 11, 12, maybe younger, actually younger. And I was talking a little philosophy. We used to, you know, because one of the things, because I've done a lot of, I do a lot of driving, I either listen to lectures or I take the opportunity to really have a nice conversation with whoever's in the car, you know, like a personal conversation. And so we used to talk a lot of philosophy with my little girls. And I was explaining to them, you know, you'd be surprised how many people in this world think they're God. And that they're like, no, you know, Dad, no, that's... I said, that's true. That's true. Oh, no, that's... They think they're God. You know, like they just couldn't believe that people are so stupid. You know, these are like little kids, you know. How could someone be so stupid? But, you know... The universities, the professors, and you know the great pundits of the world, they're thinking like this, and little kids are thinking that's stupid. You don't have any of the qualifications of God. They can even understand that. But these philosophers, they study. You know, I had a friend. He got a $20,000 grant from the government so he could study this philosophy and teach that nonsense about Aurobindo and this and who is God and who. He got a grant from the government. The government is throwing money at this stuff. Our government. We'll speak of in India. Anyway, we get to Crossways and we happen to sit down next to, you know, a couple, and they're probably about 20. So, you know, have a little chat of, you know, what do you do? Oh, you know, we do a little yoga and, you know, travel and this and that. Oh, what sort of yoga you do? Oh, you know, we meditate. Is there any philosophy behind? Oh, yes, yes, you know. We're meditating how we are God. My kids, you know, their face lit up, you know. It's true, you know. And then just to show them, my kids, you know, I really drew it out of them, you know. I wanted to really make them look like fools, you know, so the kids could just see how deeply they believed that they were God. So I just toyed with, you know, Prabhupada sometimes did that, you know, in his lectures. He sort of toyed with them a bit. So you don't have to say anything. They just make a fool out of themselves. But, so, you know, But it's surprising, you know. In this world, there are so many people that do not believe that there is God, or they believe that God is impersonal, or that they believe that they are God. Only practically this Krishna consciousness movement is powerfully presenting, and it is our mission daily to present who is the Supreme Father. Otherwise, there are no religious principles. If you don't know who is God, and you don't know, if you don't know who is God, how can you know his laws? If you don't know how, his laws, how can you know religion? And the world is filled with that sort of nonsense. And therefore, all they really know is how to present a false representation of cheating religion, which the Srimad Bhagavatam systematically kicks out. So where Bhagavad Gita leaves off, you surrender to Krishna, you give up all your cheating religion, Srimad Bhagavatam, canto by canto, exposes cheating religions in all varieties, very scientifically. By the end of studying Srimad Bhagavatam, you can detect every type of cheating religion there possibly is. Even, sometimes, you know, if we cheat ourselves within Bhakti Yoga, that is also, I don't know. So we have this great treasure chest that is given to us by Srila Prabhupada, by Srila Vyasadeva, by Lord Chaitanya. Srila Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya gave us two things. In this age, the religious principle, all the other things in other ages you can't do. You can chant Hare Krishna. And to understand the science of religion, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Two things, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because in other ages, religious principles, if you live 100,000 years, yes, you can meditate. I don't know if many people these days live for 100,000 years, but their meditation in Kali Yuga is not really going to be effective. You know, maybe 1,000 years, okay, they might get somewhere. Treta Yuga, you know, Jagya, okay, you know, I know that when I do a little Jagya, none of my things are made out of gold, or, you know, it costs, you know, actually it costs millions of dollars, you know, to actually perform Jagya as they're, you know, doing in these days. Prabhupada said, even deity worship. Now in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, Lord Chaitanya didn't establish any temples. Most important, not that, you know, if we can establish them, it's very nice and should be done. But most important is the Sankirtan and book distribution. And Prabhupada said when he was in India, he saw in temples, so many vacant temples, and in some temples he saw dogs with their passing stool. People are not interested. You know, the churches are empty. Some of the temples are empty. Actually, whatever, you know, is being revived in the way of, you know, people attending churches and mosques, actually, it's the further of, you know, the enthusiasm of the Krishna consciousness movement, which has revived people wanting to go to a church or a temple like that, because of the enthusiasm. Because, you know, that when Prabhupada, you know, he was making so many followers, thousands and thousands, and the people from Judaism and Christianity said, these are our boys and girls. They had no interest. They weren't coming to our churches and mosques and synagogues. Now they're dancing like madmen for God. But they're our boys and girls. So then, you know, there's a little competition. Otherwise, no one was interested. But in Kali Yuga, the main religious principle is to chant the holy name, and to do that purely and to understand the science of God, who is the Supreme Father, Krishna, one can study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Jai, we'll go to the Prabhupada, Hare Krishna. Any questions at all?
Jambavati,
yeah.
And it was said that he performed, he chose to perform the wedding on the auspicious astrological period.
He, yeah.
It was mentioned. And what if Krishna does that, what remains for us?
Yes.
And
he even killed demons during the Abhijit, which is an auspicious time as well.
Yes. So
he could have killed them at any time.
I think this is something that he did. not bound because he's Sarva Loka Maheshwara. He doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to choose when to do the things. But I think he wants to tell us what we need to do. If he, as a God, chooses the proper time for everything, what remains for us? And another thing was. There was just one funny. I saw once in a trend there was a T-shirt and one was saying, "I was an atheist until I realized I'm God."
Yeah, that's funny.
And another thing about astrology, for me, the way I see the astrology is like a snapshot. You know how we have in Canada, snapshot is a snapshot of our, where we are spiritually on our way going back to God, and what lessons we need to learn, what we need to do to evolve in this point of time. So it's better to have an advisor like astrologer to tell us what lessons we need to learn easy way by hearing instead of by learning by the school of hard knocks.
That's a very good point, Rasi. I'll just thanks for that. That's very nice. Yeah, actually, because, you know, in the astrological text, it does mention that, you know, there are certain demigods that rule certain planets, like, you know, Shani rules Saturn, etc. But each planet is also has a Vaishnava deity. So the Vaishnava deity for Saturn is Korma. So, and so, it, you know, in the astrological text, it actually, so those, you know, who... as you say, devotees, they don't necessarily, they don't ever worship demigods to get some relief. But they, you know, what I usually recommend is that if I see persons having particular problems in life related to a certain planet, you can understand there is a debit, you know, some problem in the previous life, and problems are always associated with our consciousness being not up to scratch. That's where the problem starts. So it comes from our consciousness, and then we're paying a price in this life. So the price that we pay is sort of, you know, it's a punishment that tries to also reform you, you know. So like if someone has been, you know, if someone misuses the astrological signs or any, you know, form of higher knowledge at the exploitation of others and for their own benefit, in the next life they're born blind. See? So, you know, the punishment is sort of fitting, you know, that why I cannot see, what have I done, you know, that, you know, so the punishment, but until the consciousness is rectified, the problem is not solved. The punishment is there, but a person has to understand, okay, what did I do? What could I have done? And you can actually see, and therefore I recommend that when a person has some, you know, difficulty like that, I'll recommend certain sections of the Bhagavatam. Read this. You know, if people have problem with Venus, quite often their relationship with women is dysfunctional. And I'll recommend that you read these chapters associated with, you know, the Goddess of Fortune, the Queens of Dwarka. So you can learn to understand how a woman thinks nicely and how to see women in a proper, respectful way, see how things are, you know, where the real standard is, properly like that. And it adjusts the consciousness, you know, learn how to see all women as mother and so many things. So it adjusts the then the problem becomes fixed. Otherwise, they will just go on having problems, you know, with the opposite sex like that. So, similarly, if people have problems with, you know, Mars, which represents, you know, a misuse, a dysfunctional use of their physical strength or their force or their power or authority, then I recommend that they read the, you know, of course, the Vaishnava deity for Mars is Lord Narasimhadeva, and I'll recommend you read that chapter. You know, see what happens when you misuse authority like Hiranyakasipu and just how powerful you are. And just see how powerful are the meek and humble. In fact, as described in the scriptures, there is no power greater in this world than humility. And that was demonstrated by Pilate. So, you know, people who have this great force and what have you, they have to understand, actually, if I want to be powerful in this world, let me be humble, servant of the Lord. There is no power greater than that. Let me know the Supreme Father, and let me know how to serve him. And all Vedic literatures are for these three goals. Who is the Supreme Father? What is my relationship with him? How do I act in that relationship and develop my love for God? Like that. Yeah, so very nice. Thank you, Rasa. Yeah, anything else? Any other comments, questions? Jai. All worship of Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.